This program brought to you by Vanderbilt University. You can find more audio and video on our website, vanderbilt.edu/news.
I tried to engineer this a little bit more towards the theory, the secret sauce that we use at Owen Bloggers, but are you guys interested in learning how to blog or just kind of what makes blogs successful?
How to blog.
How to blog? Okay. Cool. Oh, excellent. Okay, so that's good because that way I can actually go through the slide deck pretty much as is. But if you guys see something that you want me to blow out, specifically like what technology we use, what software we use, etc., let me know, and I'll be more than glad to dive into that. Just as a quick overview of what I wanted to go through today, I wanted to first introduce myself and, of course, introduce Owen Bloggers. Obviously, we've got people who already know both, but it should give you a good idea of where I'm coming from and what I bring to the table in terms of blogging expertise. The second, I want to talk a little bit about the world of new media, because when you talk about blogs, you talk about being a citizen in a larger space. And then finally, I do want to talk about the secret sauce that goes into what makes Owen Bloggers tick. And pretty much there are specific things that I've seen all throughout all blogs that make them successful and some that make them not so successful. Obviously, you just mentioned KFC's recent PR trick with moving the secret recipe.
Right.
And I was on that team that eventually was presented that. So it was an interesting experience, but it's interesting to look at it from a macro perspective and seeing what does work and what doesn't. So as a quick introduction to myself, I'm currently a second year MBA at Owen. I'm focusing in brand management and service operations, but before I came to Owen, I had a pretty decent background in sales and marketing strategy, mostly with think tanks and trade associations, in the healthcare industry, in the banking industry, but the single thread that I brought through all of them was bringing extra value through the marketing initiatives. And in doing that, in about 2005, I started up a side project I called 20-something Marketing, and it was a podcast focused on marketing, business, and life formed by 20-something professionals. And the idea was to just tell the story that I had seen coming out of my first year and a half of college, or sorry, the first year and a half that I had professionally, and the things they don't teach you in college. And I started talking to some of my friends, they started sharing their stories. Wouldn't this be a great topic for a blog? So we started up the blog. It's now got over 1,000 unique listeners and over 5,000 unique visitors on the site per month right now. The second concept that I started was called Marketing Diner, and that I did about maybe 6 to 9 months before I came to grad school, and it's really become more of a networking thing, but you'll see that success for Marketing Diner is very different than success for 20-something Marketing. And whenever I go into a project, I always ask myself at the very onset, what's the purpose? So when you're thinking about starting a blog, the first thing you should ask yourself is, what is it that you want to affect? With 20-something Marketing, it was, I want to tell a story. And that's pretty much it. I don't want any ulterior motives. I just want to talk about what it is that's on my mind. With Marketing Diner, it was explicitly for networking purposes. So I built a lot more stuff into it. The content that I put into it was much, much different. It was more professional. It was more geared to someone who might want to hire me later on. But that being said, after a couple years, I sort of plateaued in the trade association industry, and I decided I would come back to grad school. So I did what every good 20-something would do, and I started searching the internet, and I started going to some of the World MBA Tour, and I started searching for information. A lot of information searches, of course, start with stuff online, and that's how I found Owen Bloggers. It had been started up about 6 to 9 months before I was starting to look for grad school, but the idea was it's a bunch of Owen students talking about their experiences. And this was so radically different than anything else that I've ever seen before. Traditionally, business schools are these monolithic institutions where you peer in from your lowly position and you say, I want to be right there. I want to go into the business school. I want to get a first-rate education, and I want to come out, frankly, with a six-figure salary. But there wasn't much transparency in the process. And that's what Owen Bloggers did. Dean Jim Bradford took a chance on a group of students who came to him and said, we really want to start up a blog. We want to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. We want to talk about our experiences. And they started out, this is the original founding class, who came in, and they pretty much have a handshake agreement. They have editorial independence. They can say whatever they want, which keeps these guys on their toes every once in a while, the own marketing team. But the idea is that it's authentic. It's straight from the horse's mouth without any filtration. And it kind of grew into something very unique within Owen. Not only is it a great blog and it's a great information source for incoming students and prospective students, it's also a fantastic group within Owen to affect change. Obviously, when one of the things the bloggers love to do is get up on their soapboxes. In fact, that's the type of blog that you're going to see most often in the industry, or most often with, I guess, in any industry. But the idea here is that it was a really unique experience to come in from the outside as a blogger and see this kind of brand evangelism happen, because it was something where obviously these students really believed in the school. They felt so strongly about it. They wanted to talk about what happened a day in the life, what happens when they connect what's going on in the outside world to their actual learning experiences. And that's pretty much what attracted me. Before I had even stepped foot in the door, I'd already sent an email to Isaac, the chief executive officer at the time, and he said, yeah, come in, let's talk. We'd love to have you blog for us. So it was myself and four other people who started blogging even before we enrolled at Owen. We had sent our deposits in, and we eventually started kind of finding our own way. Obviously, I brought a lot of the stuff that I had learned over the course of my 3 or 4 years in blogging. And what came out of it was a new evolution to the bloggers. And it is what it is today, and some of the things I'll be talking later on are connected to it. But to give you an idea of where Owen Bloggers is right now, I have a short video. Kind of feel for what Owen Bloggers brings to the table. We're humorous, we're authentic, sometimes we're a little bit less than polished, but we bring a source of community to cyberspace. When someone is interested in coming to Owen, the marketing team can proudly kind of lift up a card and say, listen, go to Owen Bloggers, and it'll give you a really good idea of what it's like to be in the community. And I think that that's really the root of a lot of great bloggers. They have a great story, they stick to it, and they find ways of telling that story through different pieces, different organizations. So pretty much where Bloggers has gone from there is not only was it a great site to begin with, but where we've taken in the last 6 to 9 months has really been impressive. We have over 7,500 visitors a month come to the site. We're read by people in over 160 countries, and we're considered to be the number one student-led MBA blog on the internet. There are a lot of MBA blogs out there. Stanford has them, Harvard has them, Tulane has them, but none of them can touch what we do, because we are given such freedom and such authority to go out there and explore what it's like to be a member of the Owen community. And really, it's something that can't be articulated in a brochure, and it's not something that can be necessarily communicated through a formal channel. So, for instance, Suzanne or any of the CMC folks over at Owen can go out and say, this is what our school is like, but why not hear it from the horse's mouth? And we're very proud of these stats, but what we're even more proud of is the fact that the blog actually turns the needle for what we're looking to do, which is, of course, convince students to actually come to Owen. To give you an idea of some of the methodology that we put into our work, we do constant survey. In fact, I've got to get ready for Welcome Weekend, or sorry, Discovery Weekend coming in soon. But we survey students and we ask them, how do you like our blog? How does it affect your decision making? Not only do we have a 34% rate on the fact that people say that it does affect their decision to come to Owen, we have close to an 80% what's called Net Promoter Score. Now, Net Promoter is a really important metric for blogs and for websites because it's the percentage of your current readership that's willing to recommend you on. Obviously, everything that happens in cyberspace happens virally. It happens because I tell somebody and someone tells someone else, and it grows from there. This is what we manage our expectations to. When we first came together as a new executive team and we said, where do we want to take this? The blog has been founded. The blog has seen great success. How do we now turn that into a process? How do we bring that into a system that will work from now until the end of time or whenever they decide to shut us down because we go over the line? The idea, though, is that we really are very proud of what we do, and we're also very proud to be new media mavens within the business school. When it comes down to being the geeks in the marketing department, we are the geeks in the marketing department. We have everything from our own podcast. Sorry, this is apparently I've got my time low on here. But we have a talk show now, myself and my roommate, who happens to be one of probably the smartest people when it comes to consulting services. She and I do a podcast every week, the purpose of which is just to talk about what's going on in Owen. We have seen growth from 30 to 50 listeners per week. And it's kind of interesting because we do have special guests on, and it's a dinky little thing. It's not like we do anything huge. We don't interview like heads of state on it, but it does fill a niche, and we enjoy doing it, and it helps us move the dial forward. We also do cool roundtables, including one that we did last year with a guy named CC Chapman. We were talking about BarCamp Nashville the other day. There is a ton of interest in the new media community about helping each other out. And CC Chapman, who's a very well-renowned new media consultant, came in. Suzanne and, were you there, Ann? But I know Carlos was there. And we had a great time. We brought in lunch. We advertised it to the entire own community. We had a packed house. And we just talked about new media. And it's the kind of passion that really drives Owen bloggers, and it's very important to setting up a blog. Not only are you interested in this, but you are able to cultivate that passion so it shows through your content. So let's shift focus slightly from the micro perspective of where Owen bloggers has come from into the larger state of new media, just so we can set the stage for what is it that makes blogs tick? What is it that defines really, I guess, bland blog with someone who just says, someone else has got a blog, I want a blog too, to something that actually moves the dial for an organization, whatever your goal might be. So to start off with, I like to define new media as anything that's not old media. Now, there are lots of different definitions for this. Everybody has their own. This is the definition that I work from. New media is anything online that has a marketing component that's not old media. That's not TV, that's not print, that's not radio. So you've got social networking, which is the MySpace, Facebooks, and Twitters. Internet marketing, which is more one-sided. Internet ads, viral marketing, websites, email. And then finally is social media, which is blogging, podcasting, and YouTube. The difference between social media and the other two is that there's a two-way conversation. So it's not just me going out there and saying, this is my day in the life at Owen. This is people coming back at me and sometimes challenging what I say. I go out there and I make an opinion about something that's going on in cyberspace or something that's going on in the marketing industry, and someone can post on that exact post and say, well, I disagree with you. In fact, we have a nice little series of discussions that always go on around rankings time. When they're, last year we were, I guess, 44th. I know we don't like to talk about this too much, but Owen is disproportionately ranked lower than it should be because the administration does not like to play the game. But the idea is that it always sparks a conversation on the site. Is Owen where it's supposed to be, or what can be improved? Is the rankings methodology succinct? Is it important? Is it relevant? Or is it not? So obviously, social media is a conversation, and that's something that you have to understand going into blogging. It's not just you talking to an audience, it's the audience talking back at you. Now, it doesn't always happen like that at first. For the first maybe year and a half that I blogged on 20-something marketing, I didn't have a single comment. People were reading, but they weren't interacting. So the question was then, how do I bring them to start talking to me? How do I get them to start talking about the concept to other people? And that's something we're going to talk about in just a moment. But why is new media important? Why are blogs important? Well, this is a slide that I prepared for my internship this past summer with Young Brands. But the idea here is that these numbers are startling. These are brand new. I think they came out in July. But it really talks to the fact that with, and in particular, millennials and Generation Y are losing their trust in traditional sources of media. They're no longer trusting the networks. They're no longer depending on newspapers for real-time information. They look to blogs. One of the most interesting pieces of information I like here is the 64% say they go online because it's the easiest way to get information versus 10% for the information itself. So obviously, anybody like ABC News and CNN, they don't have a choice anymore. They have to have blogs. They have to have this online component because it's just, it's easier. No longer is it easy enough for a 20-something to go home and watch the news and get their information. They have to go online first during the day while they're at work, while they're at school. You'd be amazed at how much time I spend online doing really stupid things. That being said, technology drives the engagement, and engagement drives behavior. 60% of the millennials and Generation Y that were asked in this study prefer online media because they view it to be equal to traditional media. So what you say on a blog can be viewed as just as trustworthy, just as credible, as long as you present it in a professional manner. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Wikipedia at all, but if you listen to some of the developers of Wikipedia, you'll never want to cite Wikipedia ever again. Even though it's got a lot of great information in it, it can have a lot of bad information in it. In fact, a friend of mine put on the Wikipedia Pirates post, "All pirates are evil." And it stayed up for about 36 hours. And no one corrected it. Not that pirates are necessarily evil one way or the other, but the idea is that because it's a conglomeration, because it's a community adding into what is considered to be truth, it's kind of an interesting world to be in. And the last thing here is 1 in 3 have more confidence in new media, in things like blogs and podcasts, than they do the TV networks, which is really, really surprising, and it's only going up. So it's something that we all have to be cognizant of. Obviously, Owen caught on to this really, really early, saying, you know what, there's one thing that we can say in our brochures, but if we really want to get the message across, we have to do it in a blog. We have to be able to say, not only is our message succinct, but not only are we talking about it, but the students are talking about it as well. What's really cool about the Owen Marketing Department as it relates to Owen bloggers is that there's an arm's length relationship. They're always there for me if I need them, but never has the marketing department ever come to bloggers and said, talk about this or talk about that. It's a specifically stated rule that they leave us alone to do what we need to do. And in doing that, we gain authenticity and we gain credibility. And that's going to be extremely important when talking about the special sauce. So the question is, what is the secret sauce? Obviously, you go online, you see your brother Ned has a blog. Why does his blog fail, whereas someone like Perez Hilton, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Perez, but he's a widely read gossip blogger. He's one of the most hated individuals in Hollywood, but he's also one of the most read individuals in Hollywood. The difference between what Perez does and what Brother Ned does is personality, and that is the secret sauce. And I realize that it's a little bit anticlimactic, so I added the really weird photo of this guy that I found online. But the idea is that personality really is the secret sauce. It's pretty easy to set up a blog. You can go to Blogger, you can go to WordPress, you can go to TypePad, and set up a blog within 5 minutes. The question is, can you put the content, the story, and the personality behind it to make it work? Specifically, personalities are the way to link your online brand with your real-world brand. They're also the competitive arena. No longer is it just okay to compete on brand name, or is it able to, are you able to compete on the cost of your product? You have to have a brand personality. Now more than ever with millennials and Generation Y, they identify with personality, they identify with the brand rather than necessarily reason. And it's really interesting to look at that because you look at Starbucks and you know it's true. Starbucks is a lifestyle brand. They identify with the personality. They say, this is what I want to be, and they go to Starbucks. They pay inordinate amounts of money for coffee, but it's okay because it's a brand. There are three major components to the secret sauce. You have to be unique, it has to be authentic, and it has to be talkable. And all three of these things are hugely important in getting customers to do what you want them to do. Whether it's a blog that's instructing people on how to sign up for classes, or if it's an instructor trying to educate his students, a blog has to have these three components in order to be truly effective. And I'll go through each and every one of these things just to talk a little bit about where bloggers is and how we've been able to cultivate this in the secret sauce. As a quick note, this is not coming from me. This is coming from a guy named Dr. Bragra, who wrote a book called Personality Not Included, which is probably the seminal book for anything in new media. Not only is it fantastic in terms of helping you set up things, but it's also fantastic as it's a guide. If you're having problems talking to your boss or talking to a colleague about why you should have a new media component to your marketing mix, it actually has a guide. It tells you what you can say, how to counter certain arguments, and it's a fantastic book, and it's where I'm getting the majority of this information. So obviously, unique is pretty self-explanatory, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Obviously, you have to have something that's going to be interesting to your audience. I give a great example of socks. If you're just talking about socks in terms of the price of socks in Walmart versus Target, that's not really interesting. But you can make a sock blog unique by being the best in class. If you talk about everything and anything and everything about socks, you'll be able to work with it. Have you guys ever seen Snakes on a Plane? There's a really awful movie out called Snakes on a Plane. It came out about 2 years ago. I swear to God, the worst movie you'll ever see in your life. It's exactly what it is. It's Snakes on a Plane with Samuel Jackson. The idea, though, is that somebody caught wind of this, and he started a blog called Snakes on a Blog. It was a terrible movie, but people went to see it because he created a blog called Snakes on a Blog, and he did everything and anything about Snakes on a Blog. He tirelessly went after it, and that's how he created his unique edge. So just because the subject matter is boring doesn't mean that you can't have a unique aspect. That being said, you got to move on to authenticity. Four things that are really important. Define a credible heritage. Now, for bloggers, that credible heritage is not necessarily the history of our brand, but it's the history of the individual students that write for bloggers. Demonstrate passion and belief. Again, we cultivate it in every way, shape, and form. We are nuts about Owen. We love Owen. We love it for its flaws. We love it for its strong points, and we think that it can go great places. That kind of excitement and that kind of passion will communicate onto your content. Third is foster individuals instead of people. And this goes for more than just blogs. This goes for any new media initiative that you can think of. You can't just connect to the people. You have to connect to an individual. So I have to go to a blog, and if you put a comment on my site, I can't just do a single form letter on the post to respond to you. I have to say, I understand where you're coming from. I'm going to respond to you. I am going to argue with you. But it can't just be some sort of larger impersonal approach. And fourth is having motives beyond profit. This is something that I worked a lot with KFC over the summer. If you have a blog and you want to get advertising, you have to be really, really careful, because there have been bloggers that have shot themselves in the foot by having the wrong advertisers on their site. I have advertisers on my site, but I go through a company called TextLink Ads. Because I've been able to generate a certain number of hits, TextLink Ads came to me and said, we're interested in having you as one of our beta testers. Let's see what we can do. I have veto power over any of the advertisers on my site. And I explicitly state to people that, yes, I am making money on the site. I do want you to click the links. But more often than not, I want you to actually appreciate the products that are being advertised on my site. So I'm not going to advertise something that's completely irrelevant to my audience. I appreciate their time. And that's what it is with that. As I mentioned, we really do speak from the heart. These are some of our bloggers, and one of the things that we started doing almost immediately when, gosh darn it, one of the first things that we did was, instead of having faceless bloggers where we had a simple blog and you saw the name, the first name of the person, and you never saw anything else about them, we put a lot of focus in, sorry, as you can see, I use this as a cycling thing, and apparently the time is not there. But the idea here is that we put up the photo of every single blogger to let you connect with who's there. Obviously, you can tell that, gosh darn it, Bridget right here. Bridget is really, really sporty. She loves to talk about competition. That photo says something to our audience. And that's what we mean about defining incredible heritage. It's not just saying this is the history, but this is the personality behind it. There's a real human behind it. In fact, one of the things that really made own bloggers unique is that the University of Rochester had tried to do a student blog about a year, was it 6 months to a year, before own bloggers tried to do theirs. And they actually had fake students blogging. They set up fake names, fake personalities, fake backstories. Blew up in University of Rochester's face. And you know why? Because they use stock photography for their photos. So the first thing that we do with any new blogger is we get their photo and we get a bio from them. And we post it up on the site and you can read about anybody on the site. The other thing that I've done is I've made sure that every single person's full name is connected to their blog. So if you search for my name online, you're going to find Owen Bloggers. Every good, bad, and ugly comment that I've ever made in my life is up there, which is running the gambit given the fact that I do want to get a good job after grad school. But the idea is that it's out there. It's personal. I've got skin in the game. And it shows by putting this kind of stuff up front. Secondly of which is articulating, well, I guess this is both passion and belief, and individuals instead of people. The idea here is, not only do we talk about day in life at Owen Bloggers, we also give bloggers a chance to show off their intellectual capital. So we've been able to branch out. We have started two different blogs. One's called Little Blue Pill that you see up here, and the other is called Big Red Horseshoe. So students that are in strategy and students that are in healthcare are invited to start blogging on the site, and they can then show this off to recruiters and say, listen, not only am I studying this, not only am I passionate about this, but I'm articulate as well. It's a writing sample. It's something that they can bring to the table that nobody else can. And it's also a reason for them to keep blogging, because keep in mind, all these bloggers do it out of the goodness of their heart and the occasional free lunch that we do every once in a long while. And polo shirts now. We have polo shirts, which is kind of cool. The idea, though, is that we really do, we're known for Little Blue Pill and Big Red Horseshoe because these guys go beyond our traditional audience. And you'll see this with a lot of different blogs, like Huffington Post, for instance. Huffington Post really pioneered the portfolio blog site, where you not just have a single blog, you've got blogs that speak to each individual constituency. And we're lucky enough at Owen to have a really diverse group of students that want to blog for us, so we have people who want to do, we have enough bloggers to do Little Blue Pill, Big Red Horseshoe, and we just need a new one that's called the Social Impact Blog that has contributors from our three major social impact organizations, Project Pyramid, Net Impact, and 100% Owen. All these guys put their stuff together, and we talk about what's going on, what's going green, what's going sustainable at Owen. And actually, that was kicked off because we covered the 2007 Net Impact Conference that was held here at Owen last year, which has some fantastic coverage if you're ever on the site. Switching over to talkability. Talkability has three main things. Number one, offer something of value that's limited, something that you can't get anywhere else. Obviously, for Owen bloggers, this is the opinions of students. We want to give them something they can't find anywhere else. And sometimes this means what I affectionately deem as poking the cat. Where if a student doesn't like something and it's something that we should have a conversation about, we'll blog about it. In fact, there was an instance this past, 2 months ago, where a student who was a first year who had just been set up as a blogger wanted to talk about an incident that happened during orientation weekend. And it was not the most flattering thing. But because we have this editorial policy of not only being independent, but also not censoring our bloggers, we worked with him, and we figured out how we can make it happen. we didn't say we're going to edit your blog post, but we want to figure out what we can do to make your post contribute to the value that we present. So Bloggers has value not only for prospective students, but also for the community as a whole. It got a discussion started about this particular issue. It was something that we had talked to the administration about, and it actually got people talking. It was interesting, and it was valuable. Two, have a hook that's shareable. When you're talking about blogs, this is simply making it go viral, putting the tools on your site, and I'll have some of those later on, that will make it easier for you to share information. Things like Share This, which is an application that allows you to share to a whole bunch of different sites, as well as the idea of being able to maybe subscribe via email, RSS feeds, simple things that allow you to basically have your content any way you want it, because that's a huge, huge value when it comes to blogging. And then lastly, getting out of the way. When you have blogs that are not only done by yourself, but also by other people, letting people have a little bit of rope and seeing what they do with it can be really, really valuable. One of the first conversations I had when they selected me as the new chief executive officer of Blogging Bloggers was I sat down with Dean Bradford, and I sat down with Dean Lehman, and I sat down with the old guard, and I said, here's what I'd like to do with the site. And I showed him a little document that I had created about what Owen Bloggers would do and what Owen Bloggers wouldn't do. It was kind of an articulation of that editorial independence policy. And Jim Bradford said, I don't want to see that. I trust you. And I can't tell you how huge that trust is for us. Because we're trusted with Owen's reputation on the site, we treat every single blog with such care and such respect. We're not just out there to say, yay, yay, rah, rah, Owen. We're out there to make Owen a better place by bringing our intellectual capital to the table in so many different ways. If you have a blog, if you're thinking about doing a blog, if you've got a blog that you're looking at adopting as your own, so if you're an organization and you see that some of your employees or any of your students have started a blog, kind of informally, approaching them like the Owen administration did to Owen Bloggers and say, we'll support you. In fact, even though we're editorial independent, we get our budget from the marketing department. It comes with no strings attached, but it comes with that trust. But getting out of the way is so important, because I've seen in certain blogs, the blogger has so much wrapped up in it that they just have to respond to someone that says something bad on the site. We had a situation last year where we had a student who basically was talking about all the reasons why Owen wasn't a top-tier school. And he kind of went off the reservation a little bit. He kind of circumvented some of the strategies that we had put in place to kind of direct the conversation elsewhere. But there was a huge, what we call, flame war. Thank you. I'm sorry. I don't know why I forgot that. But it's called flame war. When you get onto a blog, when you post something, and all of a sudden you start getting into tit for tat with somebody, it's not good. Because people's tempers get enraged, and suddenly you get all the stuff on your blog that you don't want out there. You can shut the comments down, but what does that do to your brand? That kicks you in the knees. That takes away all this credibility that you just got. Now, to wrap all this together, to explain exactly what we do, actually before I do that, let me show you two sites that I really like. The first of which is copyblogger.com. When you talk about adding value to the site and getting bloggers up to speed with the kind of content that we want them to do, CopyBlogger is an incredible resource. It was set up by a copywriter and advertising agency, and it talks about everything from the creative process to marketing copy to direct mail. Fantastic resource. And the second site that I want to show you guys was Share This. This is that one that I just mentioned. Share This is a new type of platform. You embed this button on your site. You can do it through WordPress, you can do it through Blogger, but what happens is that there are so many of these social networking sites coming up through the ranks. This constantly updates it for you, so you have exactly one button that does them all. So, for instance, say I start a social networking site today, and it's called Vanderbilt Shares, and it gains enough credibility, and suddenly everyone's using it. I don't have to update Owen Bloggers to make sure that I can share this on Owen Bloggers. share this is its own organization, and it will go ahead and hard code the things on another site. It's really, really cool. I encourage you, next time you're browsing around the web and you see this green button, click on it, because it is a very cool function that can help you disseminate your information. But what I wanted to do was bring all this together, bring the talkability, the authenticity, and the uniqueness together in an example from what I was doing over the summer. KFC, obviously, is not exactly the most resonant brand for Generation Y and millennials. So I brought them this particular methodology, this particular secret sauce, and I said, we need to have all three of these guys together in order to be resonant with our millennials online. So, is it unique? Yes. There's nothing like KFC out there. If you have the biscuits, you know there's nothing like KFC out there. Secondly, why is it authentic? It's authentic because of the stories. It's about the stories that are told by the employees as well as students. It's what I call the Harold and Kumar effect. If you've ever seen the site, there are two guys who probably are smoking things they shouldn't, and they go out in search of White Castle. There is that kind of fandom for KFC, but it's below the radar, which is where talkability comes in. Not only does it have great products, but you want to get your customers talking about the story. So what we did with this was we took our brand personality structure, the things that we thought were strongest, the things that made up our secret sauce for KFC's new media strategy, and we combined it with the fan cycle. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but this is directly from Church of the Customer. Church of the Customer blog, great customer evangelism blog, talks about all the really great things that are going on that are spearheaded by customers. In fact, Owen Bloggers was highlighted on that about a year and a half ago. But the idea is that you're first introduced to a product, you start participating with the product, you start buying it constantly, you adopt the product as a part of your daily routine, you start talking about the product, you then join a community of people talking about the product, and then you start owning the product. You say, it is my responsibility to make sure that everyone knows about Red Bull, because I am so much enthralled with Red Bull that I want everybody who I know to know that I'm a Red Bull person, and I want them to try it too. And then finally, they're going to introduce it to new people. What we did was we created a strategy that hardwired our new media into our loyalty structure. So what's really cool here is that we've set up a blog and brand community at every step of the way. First of all, we started with the employees in internal storytelling. The employees, of course, restaurants are the cornerstone of thousands of career and employment opportunities around the country. There are some really great personalities within KFC. If you think that this is wrong, go to kfcnation.com. Great internal website, or great website for staff members. That's supposed to be internal, but it's a great representation of brand community. Secondly, we're in the process of setting up right now a customer site where they can share their experiences. If you go onto Facebook and you Google or you search on Facebook for KFC, you'll find that there are tons of customers that love KFC. In fact, there are upwards of 50,000 members of the I Love KFC group from the US. We want to harness that to bring it through to joining a brand community. Currently, Taco Bell has something set up called Taco Entourage. It's a community of 2,000 people who love Taco Bell, who basically participate in ongoing focus groups. What do they love about a Taco Bell? What is it that really makes them come back time and time and time again? And then ultimately, that brand community is tied in with something that we want to do, which is incentivizing people to go out and own their experiences. Tell KFC, what is it you want to see? A great example of this is what Starbucks is doing right now. If you go to, I think it's mystarbucksidea.com, Starbucks has gone out and said, tell us ways that we can improve our own business model. And what people can do is you can register on the site, you can vote for ideas. So if you like something, you vote it up. It's just like it's a dig methodology. I don't know if you guys have been to dig, but it's just like that. But the idea here is that we've set up components all across the fan cycle that constantly move people from one thing to another. And again, I can't stress enough how much Personality Not Included is a great book. It's a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic resource that will show you how to do this. Let's see. So just to recap, The secret sauce, if you're thinking about setting up a blog or you're thinking about working with blogs, first ask yourself, what do you want to achieve? What is it? Is it bringing students into a more participatory role within the classroom? Is it getting customers to buy into your product? Is it to get customer feedback into a new product launch? Ask yourself, is it measurable? We are using our surveys over and over and over again to get an idea of where we're going. Obviously, one set of metrics is not fantastic to go off of, but when you combine it year after year after year, we're going to be able to tell, are the changes that we're making, is something like an owenbloggers.com affecting admissions? Secondly, just asking yourself, is your content authentic? Going back to heritage, belief, individuals instead of people, and motives beyond profit. All of these things are seriously important to getting customers to trust you. And when it comes down to it, this is a lot of what you'll experience within office politics. If you're going up to somebody and you have no authority over them, you have to demonstrate all of these in order to get them to come around to your line of thinking. And then finally, when you finally are ready to set up your blog, build it in a talkable structure. Offer something of value that's limited, whether it be a lecture that you're not posting to your regular site, if it's a giveaway that you wouldn't be able to get anywhere else. Give them a hook that's shareable. Participate in every possible way. Go list on iTunes. List on blog directories. Use Share This. Put your content anywhere and everywhere that you can possibly find. And then finally, get out of the way and let your customers take control of it. Let them show you where they want to go and then deal with it. Because I guarantee you, they're going to have more credibility in your product and they're going to be more participatory in your product afterwards. So I know that I've probably gone on a little bit longer than I wanted to, but do you guys have any questions?
I do. I'm a web developer with the School of Medicine mm-hmm. here at Vanderbilt, and we've been thinking about blogging there with students. Mm-hmm. But one thing that gives us pause is that we have HIPAA rules where we have to protect privacy of patients and other things. So it would be really hard to let students just run free willy-nilly with mm-hmm. the blog. So what's your opinion? Do you think students would feel straitjacketed having to work with these HIPAA rules? And we would have to have administrators mm-hmm. looking at the blogs.
Obviously, that's something that we look into all the time. Obviously, not as sensitive, but I know HIPAA is a really kind of interesting thing. Let me go on to something and show you something that we do. You're going to have to trust me on this. But something that we've noticed is that there's knowledge that we build up. Obviously, there are ways of dealing with blogs like that post I mentioned from the beginning of the year that the more senior bloggers know how to deal with, but not necessarily the junior bloggers. And we take it upon ourselves to coach. And what we've done is we've set up a special blog. We have a blogger guide that's online. It's not accessible by anybody else but the bloggers. But we talk about rules and regulations. So my advice would be go out and find a student that's really, really intelligent on HIPAA regulations. Get them to help found this blog. Or if there are go out and find if the blogger's already out there. And say, we want to set you up with a blog. We want to be able to furnish you with the professional resources necessary in order to attract the kind of students we want. Utilizing that senior knowledge to create a knowledge base is extremely important. So we have a post on our blogger guide that talks about how to deal with sensitive issues. So instead of saying, okay, I'm pissed off, I want to go and talk about how lousy a particular professor is, we go through a couple of questions. One, do you really feel strongly about this? Is this something that is going to spark a conversation? Two, is this something that can be brought up directly with the deans? And something that I highly recommend is that the deans of the medical school provide some sort of open door policy specifically to the bloggers. Because whenever we're ticked off about something, the first thing we do is we have a conversation. with the deans. And we say, listen, we're upset about this. What's going on here? Now, obviously, some things can't be helped by the deans. Mm-hmm. And so we start a conversation about it. But we dissent intelligently. Our internal goal is to be the most intelligent blog on the internet. Obviously, that's really high level, and it's something that we always aspire to, but that's our North Star. We ask ourselves with every blog post, is this going to make us look smarter? In the eyes of recruiters, in the eyes of potential students, are we showing off the best side of all?
We might look and see if there's anything that are there other medical schools
yeah.
that this sort of...
Michigan does it. They have all the way through first starting medical school, but they do talk about patients they've seen, and they're not mentioning mm-hmm. names, but they're even afraid that if you got too specific, you can figure it out. Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of why you might want to think about the scope mm-hmm. a little bit. Don't talk about necessarily the patients you see. Talk about your experiences. Talk about day in the life. Talk about set up a medical blog. Talk about connecting real world items with what's going on in the classroom. In fact, I know that the medical school just got a brand new dean. I would highly encourage the new dean to become one of the new bloggers to kind of help set the tone for it, because Jim Bradford does that, and it's inspiring to other bloggers because they're blogging right beside his posts. And it's also a great vote of confidence in the students.
Good advice.
Yeah.
I would like to say a little bit more about, I think you described it as a risk, that you know, you're making comments on this blog that have your name attached to them,
mm-hmm.
that will be out on the internet for the next million years.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows where it'll go, but part of me worries about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've thought about this before. I mean, I'm not completely worried about it, but I think there's an issue there. And I'm wondering, maybe in light of especially recruiting new bloggers,
mm-hmm.
how do you manage the risk that's associated with putting yourself out there in such a public and permanent way?
As I mentioned, the first thing that we tell bloggers is that our goal is to be the most intelligent blog on the internet. We're not just talking about the bad things. We're talking about what's going to make us smarter. So obviously, we try to build the upside in there big time. The thing that we're building in this year, probably more than anything else, is the professional advantages of blogging, because it does build your personal brand no matter what industry you're in, and it also allows you space to explore. I know a ton of this stuff because I've explored it. That's what Marketing Diary was all about. It wasn't necessarily because I wanted to make it the best blog on the internet. In fact, I think maybe 20 people read the blog on a regular basis. But you know what? It's my space to explore. And as long as you've got people who know what recruiters are looking for available to help coach the students that are on the blog, that's all you need. Because we have content coaches. We've got people in finance, people in banking, people in healthcare that know what recruiters want to see. And if a blogger is ever concerned, that their post is going to be picked up negatively, then honestly, that yeah, they just don't do it. They go it, they go ask, they talk through it. Obviously, we're never going to edit anybody's information. This one particular individual that I talked about in terms of the last rankings battle, I would hate to be him, because not because he dissented, but because he made a really stupid argument. And that's the thing. Recruiters will respect you if you bring sensible solutions to the table. We never just complain. We never go up on our soapbox. We will say, here's something that we've seen. This is how we would improve it. So instead of complaining, it's building solutions. And that's what we mean about keeping ourselves to a higher standard. Obviously, it's takes a lot of time to figure out where that sweet spot is. But we had a lot of fun doing it, too. I mean, obviously, when we say unedited, uncensored, that is open to a lot of interpretation. And my first big challenge was figuring out what the hell that meant. Does it mean that I talk about every single thing that I don't like about Owen? Do I talk about all my personal opinions of my professors? Obviously, no.
Right. It's self-edited.
Exactly.
It's self-censored.
It's self-edited.
Like you've got some resources in place for people who, for bloggers who mean well but may not know how to do what they want to do in that case.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. And whenever I talk to bloggers, I'm always adamant that just because you can't immediately see a clear way of talking about the subject matter that's going to benefit you doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Draft the post, put it aside, spend 24 hours, come back to it. If it still makes as much sense to you as it does then, if the content coaches can't help you, if you feel strongly about it, post it. If you have hesitation that it's going to reflect poorly on you, don't post it. But I mean, I'm in a weird situation because whenever I blog, I can blog some really interesting things. I can poke the cat a little bit because I'm interested in new media, and when new media professionals look at it, they have a tendency to think higher of that kind of a blog. I mean, actually,
part of it involves knowing. I mean, if you're going to put yourself at risk with these kind of people, you need to know what those kind of people are like.
Oh,
so
and
you can kind of moderate that risk.
Oh, absolutely. And we have it.
Which is hard because part of it is unknown.
Uh huh.
Right? Because I'm at the Center for Teaching, and so I'm thinking of imagining the blog where we have some faculty, maybe some TAs, who blog about their experiences in the classroom. Right? I can see some value there, but I can also see some grad students thinking, "Whoa, I'm going to have to try to get a faculty job someday." Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say something that some, you know, crazy psychology professor or hiring committee is going to say, what is this guy doing? Well, he wrote this. We can't hire him.
And that's why it's really important to have really good people to start off with. People who you put trust in. People who can identify other good people. Mm-hmm. I made the bad mistake of not vetting a couple bloggers as well as I should have this past year when we open up applications. We have people submit to us a single writing sample, and we do an interview. But last year, they did the same thing, only they consulted the applications committee, the admissions committee, and said, what do you think of this person? And obviously, they weeded out a couple people that would have been a little bit more less mature than necessary. Blogging on this kind of blog requires a lot of maturity. It requires you to be a lot more intelligent than the average soapbox blogger.
And also, I think with any blog, the first step is to become a consumer of blogs that the audience that you're trying to reach is already reading, and understand what the community is like, what sorts of issues they're interested in, what issues have been hot topics or touched off big debates, which ones haven't. And also knowing who the big dogs are in your sphere of influence, that's another way to, I've always seen it as an ingredient in the sauce, is if you can get the people who are, your audience is already reading you,
then
and you're engaging with them.
They'll post about your blog at some point.
Yeah, you're not in a vacuum.
And this actually goes back to a session that we sat in during bar camp. First, you have to become a consumer of the content. Then you have to be a participator in the content. So you have to post on other people's blogs. And then, only then, once you've gotten the feel for the dynamics of your particular mini blogosphere, that's when you can start a blog. Because a ton of people, and I've seen this with a lot of different organizations, both professionally and personally, they're like, ooh, I want to get a blog because everyone else is doing a blog. Yeah. That's a surefire way of getting in trouble. You have to think to yourself, why do you want to do this? Is this going to help you accomplish your goals? Obviously, when I worked with KFC, the first thing that I thought about is, oh, I'm really good at blogs. Let me bring a blog to them. But the question was, how does that help them? It's not going to help them. Nobody wants to read about the tirades of an employee at KFC. Well, I guess that's the problem. They probably would want to read that. Especially Google Starbucks. Like, go to technorati.com. It's the major blog search site, and search for Starbucks. And there are a couple of blogs that are written by former Starbucks baristas, and it's some of the most enjoyable reading. if you don't like Starbucks. And actually, you bring up a good point, because I hate Starbucks. I dislike it personally, and I've said some things on a podcast, and I've written things about why I don't like Starbucks.
Right.
Somebody asked me, do I want to apply for a job with Starbucks corporate? I'm not going to put myself in that situation, because I know that if I start going down that route, those words are going to come back to bite me.
Right, right. And there's a power dynamic here, right? You may feel comfortable never working for Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Never feeling like, I really need to try to get a job. I don't have a job. Let me try Starbucks, right?
And I specifically said that to myself when I first made the comments. I'm like, I'm never going to be able to work for Starbucks.
And if you're not okay making that decision, then you don't make those comments.
Or for anybody who respects Starbucks a lot. So obviously it's just one of those things where you have to make a decision for yourself personally.
I'll share one thought I've heard about this question about kind of risk is that, and you referred to this earlier, right? If I Google your name, I'm going to find out a lot that you've put on the internet. Not what other people have put on the internet about you, but you're establishing your internet presence.
Called an online footprint.
Yeah, and so if you're not doing that, then you'll have an online footprint, you just won't have any fit there. And who wants one of those?
And that's part of what the university, what strategy of having such a big YouTube presence. Vanderbilt's on YouTube. Doesn't matter if the university is posting or not. But now when you search YouTube for Vanderbilt, you find a lot of really high quality content, because you're in that space, like you said, even if your personal footprint's a lot smaller than the university. But not playing it doesn't mean you're not
going to
be part of it.
Because, have you guys seen this video yet?
That's
hilarious.
Yeah.
The unit forever! But yeah, the thing that you should always be doing for yourself is you should be Googling yourself constantly, Googling yourself and your organization, because this thing gets more hits than all of the videos we have posted on from Owen Bloggers. Like,
oh, it is so good.
And you don't understand how many requests I get to do a response video to this. They're like, yeah, let's do it. I'm like, no, we have to keep ourselves higher than that. I would love, believe me, when there is so much that we can do. There was a great concept that came across my inbox about combining a Sally Struthers video with the Duke Fuqua cheating scandal. Yeah. Now I'm really I'm regretting either A, that I played this, or B, that I dressed so preppy today. But yeah, you can obviously when people search for Owen and Vanderbilt on YouTube, that's what they usually come up with. Luckily, they're not as much now, because we put so much content out there. We've worked with the marketing department, and we, after last year, we got ourselves a really nice camera. By the way, thanks, guys, still. Really nice camera that we use to cover events. So we just had an event this past weekend at Owen called Human Capital Case Competition. And we basically interviewed all these different teams from Owen. But it's a way of being able, oh gosh, don't I love this? It's really depressing being an MBA student.
There's always a PhD.
I mentioned that to my parents, and like, no. As much as that's interesting. Anyway, you can go on Owen Bloggers and you can see all the videos that we posted to YouTube about that. Oh god.
Do y'all use Blogger or WordPress for your blogs?
We use Typepad for our blogs. I'm a huge fan of WordPress. In fact, if I could wave a magic wand and get all of our bloggers to move over to WordPress, I would. The biggest Achilles heel to Owen Bloggers is that what you see on the front page is not a blog. It's a JavaScript code that aggregates a ton of blogs together into one. Not only does that create an interesting little fillet, but it also means that we're not going to be indexed like a real blog. So we have more blogs out there than Tulane, Harvard, Stanford put together. But because it's over a lot of different blogs, we're not as high up in the rankings as we could be. Now, granted, we're working on that. We're working on how we code our blogs, how we tag our blogs so that we continually rise up in the rankings. It's called search engine optimization. In fact, I'm thinking of asking you guys if you want to pay for a search engine optimization specialist to come in and work with us. But we'll talk about that later. Yvonne, guess what he's asking for again? But yeah, that's the biggest Achilles heel with it. But the upside to it is that TypePad gives you unprecedented control. TypePad is what Martha Stewart uses to blog, which should give you an idea of what kind of control, what kind of control it allows you.
If you're getting started, it's great. It's really easy to use.
Yeah,
it has a lot of features.
The best thing about WordPress is that it's so open source that people create plugins for it. So if you want a podcast, there's a podcasting plugin that all you have to do is do certain things and plug it in and you're good to go. But I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of WordPress. Drupal is also a good one. Drupal is more for the elitist blogger. I like TypePad, though, just simply because if you have people that are not used to blogging, the interface is really, really simple. And it allows you to put bloggers on there that are both junior bloggers and guest bloggers, which means that for the first 4 or 5 blogs, we don't allow our bloggers to post directly to the site. We say, draft your blog first, send an email to one of the executive team, and we'll take a look at it. And we review it, we make sure they're not crazy, we see that their grammar is proper, because obviously we have to stand behind all their blogs and they have to stand behind all of our blogs.
Jerry, we better wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no worries. Thank you guys very much. And if you guys need any help setting up your blog, let me know. Because I was working with some folks over at the law school last year on something similar.
That would be awesome. Thank you.
No worries.
And here's that along? It might be an internship or a paid consultant.
Well, paid consultant.